Good morning. Today we're going to finish up, a little bit left to go in order to finish up the second parak, and then we're going to start the third parak. Yesterday we talked about shechting a karban. Sorry, let's try that again. Shechting a chulin as a karban. And the Mishnah says basically the rule is as follows. We're outside the base of Mikdash, we're not in the temple courtyard, and the Mishnah says that, Klal, this is your basic guideline. If it's something which theoretically could be a karban right there and then, so then we're worried about Marasayan. The person's going to see you seemingly shech the carbon outside the base of Mikdash, even though it's not really a carbon, but you say it's a shlamim. Well, if you say it's a shlamim, it's got to be a shlamim. So consequently, it's an issue of Marasayan. He'll think, oh, it must be okay to shech carbon outside the base of Mikdash, and so therefore, the Chachamim came along and said, Marasayan, it's going to be an issue. The shechita is a shechita psula. However, if it's something that simply cannot be a carbon, unless you're already obligated, and the Gemara makes an assumption that, well, everyone knows whether you are or you're not obligated to bring this as a karban, so then there's no issue of marasayin, and therefore the shechita would be a good shechita. The couple of things that the Mishnah listed which don't really seem to fit into this category. Animals that could be a karban right there, and then animals that can't. So yesterday we got up to the chatas, right? So Ashokel Lashem Chatas. I'm Rav Yochanan Loshana Loshena Mechayev Chatas. Avam Mechuyev Chatas. Same Lashem Chatas. So the Gemara says, let's say it's a guy who actually is obligated to bring Karban Chatas, meaning he sinned and people know about it, so what would be the din with this guy who actually has to bring Karban Chatas, and now one more time he's outside the Beis Hamikdash, he has an animal, and he says, I'm bringing this as a Chatas. So the Gemara says, now there's an issue of Marasayan, because people will legitimately think, oh, that guy over there, he has to bring a chatas, and look, he says it's a chatas. So the Gemara makes one little adjustment, v'halo ka'amar l'shem chatas. See, he didn't say, this should be for my chatas. So I'm Rabbi Abba, v'amar l'shem chatas. So Rabbi Abba says, no, that's what he said. He said l'shem chatas, and so therefore there's now become an issue of Marasayan. Interesting, by the way, Rashi writes over here, we're talking about somebody who's sin b'shogeg, right? Somebody who, obviously, because we're talking about a carbon chatzis. Carbon chatzis is only brought by somebody who did so inadvertently. So Rashi. Rashi writes, how does everyone know about it? What did he do? He broadcasted his sin to everybody? And Rashi writes, yeah. You look at the third white line in Rashi. Rashi says that... Let me go back one more line. Rashi says that if someone is obligated to bring a karban chatas, there's a voice to it. If somebody had an unfortunate opportunity to be over an avera, even bishogeg eino mechape aleha kedeshi is bayish umiskaper lo. So Rashi writes, is it a very interesting Rashi, that what you're supposed to do at that point in time is actually broadcast that you sinned, even though it was b'shogeg, right? It was inadvertent. You certainly didn't mean to do it. You had no malintent, but it was inadvertent. Nevertheless, you should broadcast it. And Rashi writes that part of the busha that you're going to be suffering now because you sinned, that should provide a kapara for you, right? This is a really big issue in general, whether or not, if you're a sinner, whether or not you should broadcast that information to other people. Right, the Rambam famously, it's not the Rambam, it's the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, but the Rambam puts it in, you know, in nice simple Hebrew. The Rambam writes that there's a difference between Bein Adam, Mitzvahs Bein Adam L'Makom versus Bein Adam L'Chavero. Right, if it's Bein Adam L'Makom, if it's between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so you shouldn't broadcast those Averas. Those are the things which, if you do it, and you want to chuv on it, there's no need for you to tell other people that you did it. Bein Adam L'Chavero, if it's between you and another man, so the Rambam writes, those are the kinds of averas that you need to broadcast and tell other people that you wronged somebody else. Right? The Rambam says it's based on the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, and it's kind of interesting because this Rashi over here doesn't really fit into that. Because this Rashi over here is talking about, right, a chatas, a karban chatas. Generally speaking, I want to say more than generally speaking, but I just didn't go through all 36 of them, and, you know, methodically. But generally speaking, though, all those chatos are brought from averos bein adam l'makom, not bein adam l'chavero, right? Eating chalev, eating dam, right? Shabbos, avodah zarah, mefatim.
When you really
Yeah, I'm saying, and they usually follow that averus that are being agal makom. So this Rashi over here would not really fit into that scheme that the Rambam lays out. Okay, just an interesting point. It's certainly an interesting Rashi. L'shem Timur, we're back in the Gemara. The Gemara says L'shem Timur. I'm a Rav Lozal L'shem Timur. L'shem Lo Zevach Pesach Beso. Right, Timura means, right, when you are taking an animal and you say this is a Timura, well, the only way you can possibly even have a Timura is if you have another animal, which is a carbon. Right, because a Timura is an exchange for another carbon. You know, the exchange never works. The original carbon is still a carbon. This animal now is a Timura. So, Ava Yesh Lo Zevach Pesach Beso, Ema Amure Amirbe. If you have another animal in your house, and you're now saying that this animal, not the one you have in your house, but another animal which is a carbon, that animal is the original, and this is actually the Tamura. So the Gemara says, V'alo kamar l'shem Tamura. See, Tamura zivchi, amar b'yaba u'be'omar l'shem Tamura zivchi. And again, the Gemara makes that small adjustment where he actually said, this is my Tamura. This is a Tamura from my carbon. So again, so if he has a carbon in his house and he says that this is a Tamura, so now Marasayin, now people will actually think, oh yeah, that really is a carbon. And so again, people are going to walk away with the wrong conclusion that you could shech carbon outside the Beis HaMikdash. Zehaklal, then the Mishnah gives us a general rule, and you know how it works. Every time the Mishnah gives us Zehaklal, the Gemara says it's got to be including something. Lasuye mai, lasuye is olas nazir. The ola of a nazir, meaning, you take an animal, you're outside the Beis HaMikdash, and you declare this animal to be an ol of a nazir. Ma'u detema halo neder, emar neder b'tzina. The only way that this could be a real ol of nazir, meaning again, our issue is perception, marasayin. Meaning, do people really think that you're bringing a ola of a nazir? Well, in order for you to have brought that, that means that you had to have been a nazir. Right? Can you be a clandestine nazir? That's hard. That's difficult. It's real tricky. And what the Gemara is suggesting is, yeah, now, Nazir's is only 30 days. I mean, you're going to look a little disheveled after 30 days, not having a haircut, not having a shave. But, okay, but it's possible. So the Gemara suggests that, yeah, if you say Olas Nazir, it is possible people may say to themselves at that point, oh, I didn't know that. Look at that, he was a Nazir for 30 days. And again, people will think that you can shech a carbon out to the Beis HaMikdash. She'enu nidav v'nidav. What about the next part of the Mishnah? Lasuya olas yoledes. A woman bringing a carbon yoledes. Amar Rabbi Elazar loshana loshein lo isha. Sorry, the woman's not bringing it. Sorry, the man's bringing it on behalf of his wife. And we're saying now that that falls under the second half of the Mishnah, which is something which is not voluntary. It's something which you actually have to bring. So the Rav Elazar says that's only true if he doesn't have a wife. But let's say he does have a wife, and now he's bringing an animal, and he says this is a carbon olas yoledes. So people will say, oh, he's got a wife. I didn't hear anything. Okay, mazel tov. Must be that his wife had a kid. Again, the Gemara makes that same little tweak that it must be talking about a case where he actually says this is olas ishti. Why don't we know about it? Why don't we hear about it? So the Gemara says, unfortunately, it could be that it was a nafel, could be that it was a miscarriage, and so it is possible that he's obligated to bring an olas yoledes, and quite frankly, he didn't tell people because unfortunately it didn't come out to be a healthy child. Hadron Lachashoche, that is the end of the second parak. First two prakim, now literally in the books. We start now the third parak of Chulin. The first three prakim of Chulin make up half the Masechta, right? It's a long Masechta, 140 blot, and meanwhile, of those 140 blot, so three of the prakim, and Chulin has a lot of prakim. Right? Chulin goes up to the 11th. Is there 12th? No. Okay, yeah. So Chulin's 12th prakim. Okay, so it's not proportionate. The three of those 12 prakim make up half the Masechta. But of the prakim, however, this is the biggest. Although the first two are not small. First two made up 40 blot. This next parak over here starts on Daf Mem Beis, and it's going to continue now for 23 blot of Gemara. And this parak over here is extraordinarily technical. I do not think that there's a more technical chapter of Shas than the one we're about to engage in. And in it, it's going to detail all the treifas. We know that there are two big animals that you're not allowed to eat. Two animals which are kosher, I should say, that you're not allowed to eat. One is a nevela, which means that it died on its own. And you had no involvement in its death. It just simply died. And that's what we call a nevela. The other is where, even while the animal's alive, it suffered an injury. And if it suffered an injury, which is critical, so the animal now falls under the category of a treifa. And the treifa also is prohibited. And even if you shech the treifa, so shechting the treifa does prevent it from becoming a nevela. Good, so you shech the animal which is a treifa, it doesn't give off any tumah, it's not a carcass. But still, it's a shechted animal that you're not allowed to eat, it falls under the category of treifa. Treifa, unlike nevela, has a lot of details, for the simple reason that we are now going to talk about, over the course of this perek, all the different injuries that can occur to an animal that are critical in nature. You need to have a basic idea of bovine anatomy. And, right, I'm a rank amateur on this issue. Okay, that is my actual ranking. So, and I highly recommend. There are a lot of good books out there that give you good illustrations of it, and I highly recommend it. If you're not the person who likes to look at gross anatomy, so you don't have to look at the pictures. You could just hear me describe it, and my description will be something. We're going to do the Mishnah now. Now, the Mishnah over here are bullet points and their highlights. Everything mentioned in the Mishnah, and I do mean everything, everything mentioned in the Mishnah is going to be discussed in much greater detail. So right now, we're going to fly through the Mishnah, and when we get to the Gemara, we're going to discuss it, each one of these, in much greater detail. I have anyone who wants to borrow my book. I mean, you know, short term, of course, because I desperately need it, so I know what's going on. Anyone who wants to take a look, by all means, you're more than welcome to come over and take a peek. Eila trefas bebehema. These are the trefas by animals. The magic number is going to be the number 18. Now you don't see that number right now, and we get to the Gemara today. You will see that number, but the magic number that you need to keep in mind is the number 18. We're going to count 18 trefas in the Mishnah. Eila trefas bebehema nekufas avesh. It's the number when we start off with a puncture in the esophagus. You're going to notice as we go through these 18 that some of them are disqualified with a simple puncture. Some of them are disqualified with an etila, with an actual removal of part of it, part of the organ, or you need a total tear, right? And we'll talk later on this morning, right? Tosos discusses later on morning. If something only requires a puncture, what if it's teared? What if it's missing? Right? We'll talk a little bit later about that this morning. Neguvas aveshet, if the esophagus is punctured, upsukas har gargaris, and if the windpipe is cut. Now, we already learned, because we've said this many times throughout the first two parakim, cut over here means in its majority, meaning a small little tear in the esophagus, in the trachea, that's not a big deal. But if there is a major tear in the trachea where, again, we're talking now about the circumference, if more than half of it is lacerated, so that's going to be a trefa. Nikev krum shamoach, if there is a puncture in the krum shamoach, in the membrane that surrounds the brain. The Gemara later on, if memory serves me correctly, will point out that there are actually two membranes that are enveloping the brain of the animal, of the cow. And so later on, the Gemara is going to talk about which membrane we're actually making reference to. Nikav alev lebeis chalalo, puncture in the heart. The Gemara over here, the Mishnah over here, when describing the puncture in the heart, says lebeis chalalo, it's got to go all the way to the interior cavity. Right? That is not terminology that is used in the other nekevs. Meaning, if you go back up one line in the Mishnah, you'll see that it says nikav krum shamoach, right? Puncture of the membrane of the brain. Or you go back up one more line, it says nekuvas aveshet, right? The puncture of the esophagus. But when it comes to the heart, so it says nikav halev lebeis chalalo, it's got to be a puncture that penetrates all the way into the cavity. Why does the Mishnah, so to say, change its language a little bit, give it a stronger language? So Tosos over here writes, took a look at the second Tosos on the page. shehin dakin. Upshita shehin nekev chashavem klal im lo nikev lebeit chalalo. So Tosos writes, right? Tosos had a good handle on the anatomy, much better than me, that when it comes to the other organs that we're describing, the esophagus, the membrane around the brain, so those are thin membranes. Those are thin layers. So there it says nekev. You know nekev means a puncture that goes all the way through. The heart, however, is a very thick muscle. Aval leiv shehu av. Salka dachashim nikev ba'omek shehu chashav nekev. V'nitra leiv v'areya v'ata. I'm sorry. Nikev ba'omek shehu chashav nekev. So the Tosos writes that you might have thought that when it comes to the heart, you don't need such a deep nekev. In other words, you might have thought nekev just simply means a puncture that doesn't necessarily penetrate all the way through. So that's why the Mishnah had to go out of its way, just simply because of the anatomical structure of the heart. It's so thick that the Mishnah is making sure that we understand that it has to be a nekev that penetrates all the way through from the exterior into the interior cavity. Okay? Back to the Mishnah. Nishbara hashedra v'nisak hachut shalah. Breaking of the backbone and a severing of the spinal cord. We're going to see in the Gemara later on, again, I'm going on memory, I hope I'm right, that really, the critical issue, this is one, by the way, don't count this as two, you count this as one. The critical issue over here is the breaking of the spinal cord. Meaning, the only way to really break the spinal cord is to break the backbone. But but what really renders the animal trefa is the breaking of the spinal cord. So if there was, for example, a break in the backbone, but the spinal cord is still intact, so in theory the animal is not a trefa. Okay. Nitel ha-kavir v'lo-nishtar menu-klum. The total removal of the liver. Liver's gone. No trace of the liver left, all right? Livers get infected, right? Doctors, please correct me if I'm saying anything which is just categorically insane. All right, livers can get affected. Livers can basically rot out. So if there is no liver left, so the animal's a trefa. Hareya shenikva o shechasra. Lungs. Lungs which is either pierced or chaser, or missing a piece of the lung. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ashitanakev labesa simponos. Rabbi Shimon says that the nekev has to go all the way through. It has to penetrate all the way through into the bronchial tubes. Now, we'll talk later on more detail about these bronchial tubes in the lungs. Nikva hakeva. A nekev in the keva. Sorry. Back up a little bit. Good picture of the keva over here. No. Right. That's the... Okay. Okay, no good picture of the cave over here. Okay, the... Okay, here it is. Okay, there are four stomachs to a ruminating animal. Okay? Again, we'll talk about these stomachs again and again and again, right? If I can get it, anybody can get it, I assure you. The first stomach is called the carus. It's the rumen. That's the big one. Okay, if you're looking at the cavity of the animal, you're going to see this massively oversized stomach. Really, when you look at the stomach, you think you're looking just simply at the carus, at this rumen. Animal takes in grass, chews grass. It doesn't even actually chew it. It just basically... it cuts the grass from the ground and sends it right into the rumen. And there the grass just sits there. Sits there, it gets moist, bacteria, and it turns into a big pile of mush. Okay, once again, that's a very scientific term. It sends the mush into the second stomach, what in the Gemara refers to as the base of kosos, right? Anatomically, it's called the reticulum. And then back up to the mouth, right? The animal, so to say, vomits the food back up. Doesn't vomit it outside, sends it into the mouth, and then you see the animal chewing. And this is what's called chewing its cud, right? Where now you're going to see the ruminating animal is just sitting there, didn't eat anything, and it's just chewing and chewing away because that's exactly what's happening. It's chewing its cud. sends it back down again, and it loops through this process a number of times until it's nice and soft. Then and only then does it send it on to the next two stomachs, right? The after the Beis HaKosis, the next stomach is what's called in the Gemara the Hemsis. Hemsis means it grinds it down even further. And then you finally, the food is sent into the fourth stomach. This fourth stomach is called the Keva. Keva is the fourth stomach of the animal. It's basically what we, you know, in other words, if you want to try to compare their stomachs to our stomachs, it's, you know, what's most similar to our stomach. That's where digestion actually takes place. After the Keva, then it goes on to the intestines. But they need more processing because they're eating grass, right? We don't eat grass. We eat foods that can easily digest. So, right, so for them it's a...
We
huh? Right, that's true. That's cool. True. You're better at eating vegetables than me. So a nekev in the keva is going to render the animal a trefa. Nikva hamara, we'll talk, again, all this we'll talk about in much greater detail. The keva becomes a popular stomach because that's the one with all the enzymes in it. Right? When you have a kohen, when you're resident kohen, you give him three parts of the animal, the zroa, lachai, and the keva. Right? You give your kohen the fourth stomach of every animal that you take home. It's a big treat.
Does he eat the other stomachs?
I don't know. Nikva hamara. Okay, gallbladder. A puncture in the gallbladder will render the animal trefa. Nikva hadakin. A puncture in the intestines renders the animal trefa. The Mishnah then describes the inner keres. Okay. Again, Gemara later on will discuss what exactly that means. The inner kerem, the inner keres, shenikva that has a puncture, or shenikva rov hachitzona, or if the outer keres has a tear that goes along, it's the most of its length. Okay. You're only going to learn about this. Correct. You're only going to learn about these trefas after you shech the animal and you do an internal examination. I'm going to remind everybody that there's no requirement to do an internal examination, right? Because we learned earlier in the Gemara that we assume we have a chazaka, the animal is an eno trefa, the animal is not a trefa. And so I mentioned earlier, right, that we'll see it again, that generally speaking, we don't have to do trefas. We have to know all this information. We have to know what renders the animal trefa. But as far as assumptions are concerned, our assumption is the animal's not a trefa. Okay, let's continue. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Hagadola Tefach V'Hakatana Beruba. Okay, the larger keres is with a cut of a tefach, and when it comes to the smaller keres, it is Beruba, it's going to be the majority of it needs to be severed. Again, we'll talk more detail what he means by that. Hemsesu Vesa Kosos. Okay, I already told you Beis HaKosis is stomach number 2. Hemsis is stomach number 3. Mishnah kind of says it out of order, but there is a wall separating the Hemsis and the Beis HaKosis. Okay, he gives over here just a lovely illustration of that wall that separates the two of them. So, shenikva lachutz. If there is a nekev, if there's a puncture between the Hemsis and the Beis HaKosis, between stomachs number 2 and 3, so that's going to render the animal a trefa. Nafla min hagag. Okay, here's an interesting one. Animal falls off a roof. Okay, trauma. And you shecht it immediately after it falls off the roof. Now, there is, unlike all these other trefas that we mentioned over here, they're all very evident. They're self-evident, meaning a puncture, a laceration, chiser, it's missing a portion. So everything is self-evident. This one over here, Nafla Menagag, is not self-evident. We're talking about basically blunt trauma. The Nafla Menagag, Rashi writes, V'shachta miyad. He shechted it right away, right after it fell. Trefa afa pisha ein shever niraba. And even though you don't see anything, choshishin shenisat nizraku v'nizparku evareha, v'ein tam betrefa sha'alach la'moshim esinai hein. Now, nothing is self-evident. Nothing is visible. The concern is that the bones got ground up. The animal got ground up. In other words, basically, the animal went through some sort of trauma. And Rashi writes, "Ein tam b'trefos." Right. This is the first wide line in Rashi. medium wide. Really, there's no rationale, there's no explanation behind treifos. It's halacha l'moshe m'sinai hein. Right? Rashi says all this is tradition for Moshe on Tosana. Uve Gemara, Amashim im shasa me'eslez v'shachta k'shira v'afa pishalo amda. If the fell from the roof, there is ways to test whether it's not a trefa. We'll see that later on the Gemara. Again, all these things we mentioned in the Mishnah will be explored in detail as we go through the Gemara. Okay. Nishtavru rov tzoloseha. Ribs. 13 ribs on each side of the animal, holding the upper cavity of the animal in place. So if the majority of the ribs are broken, drusas hazeev. And an attack by a wolf. Now the Gemara is going to make this assumption. You know, I guess those of you who are more biologically inclined will think otherwise. But the Gemara is going to assume that much like there is poison and venom on a snake, right on the fangs of a snake, so there's some sort of poison or venom on the claws of a wolf on the drusas hazeev. Maybe the Gemara here is talking more about infection than it's talking about venom. Okay? Perhaps that's the way to understand the Mishnah. Anyway, the point is that if it's actually attacked by a ze'ev, that's another form of treifa, and even though, mind you, what's the chiddush over here, none of the organs that we mentioned were actually affected by the attack, but nevertheless, there's the assumption that some sort of venom / infection is going to enter and penetrate into this animal. Rav Yehuda Omer addresses drusas hazeev bedak or drusas hariv begasa. Rav Yehuda says, not only do you gauge the attacker, but you have to gauge the victim as well. Meaning, certain animals can handle an attack by a little animal, right? So if you have a wolf attacking a large animal, it's not a big deal. In other words, it has to be that the drusas hazeev, the attack of the wolf, is only critical to a smaller animal that you want to eat. If it's a larger animal, drusas ha'ari. It's got to be the attack of a lion. Drusas ha'nates ba'of, right? The nates. What? How do I want to translate that? An eagle? Not an eagle. Right? Oh. It's okay. Nates, right? He doesn't want to. Okay, so no, because he doesn't want to. You know. Huh? Hawk. Some sort of bird of prey. Okay, so okay. So drusas ha ne'etz ba'of hadak u drusas hagas ba'of hagas. Okay, different types of attacking birds are going to render its victim bird to be a treifa. Zahakla kol she'in kamoh chaya treifa. And then the Mishnah says, here's your rule: if it's not going to live, if the damage that was done to the animal is critical, so the animal is going to be a treifa. Kind of belies the Rashi that we just read, meaning Rashi says that all this ain lo tam, there's no rhyme or reason to any of this, it's halach l'moshe m'sinai. But the Mishnah, however, says, look, this is your general rule, if it's not going to live, so that means it's going to be a treifa. Okay, somehow we're going to have to try to